Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
If everything goes well, things will be horrible for the next several weeks, and it may be much longer. This is what a top public health expert in the United States had to say yesterday about the COVID situation in India. Infections yesterday surpassed 20 million, but the real figure is thought to be far higher. To take a closer look at what's happening, I'm joined on the line by freelance journalist VD Dashe. You're very welcome, VD. Thank you for joining us. You've recently returned to London from Mumbai, where you were visiting your family, including your grandmother. Will you describe for what life was like there when you arrived 3 months ago, because it's very different to what we're hearing now.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me on the show. So I went to Mumbai kind of end of January. At the time, I was living with my husband, who's French. So I was living in France. So travel to India was possible from there. And I got to Mumbai kind of early February. And I had to do a 7-day hotel quarantine, which I completed. And as soon as I kind of stepped out into Mumbai, I sort of realized that, you know, India was sort of behaving as though there was no pandemic happening. Modi had just spoken to the World Economic Forum at Davos and said, you know, we've solved it, we've cracked it. Our case numbers are going down, and they were. So, you know, the deaths at the time were kind of under 100 people a day. Mm-hmm. And this was while the UK was going through this huge second wave.
And then as you were there, chaos descended before your very eyes.
Yeah, so for the first few weeks, you know, we were lulled into this complacency. Restaurants were open, bars were open, weddings were happening, huge political rallies were happening, leaders were walking around unmasked. There was this huge festival. But very quickly, things kind of changed. And, you know, for me, there was a day, my grandmother's a doctor. She's 78, but she worked until last year. And there was one day when I came home to her flat, and she was on the phone kind of looking very worried. And she said, one of my patients, you know, who's been a long-time patient, can't find a bed anywhere in the city. And she was phoning all of the doctors and hospitals that she knew, trying to find a bed for them. So that's when I sort of started to realize that this is getting big again.
And we've heard so many times, and I mentioned it there at the beginning, that while the situation is dire, it's going to get worse over the coming weeks. And the true figures are believed to be far higher than what is being reported. Do you believe and accept that and think that that's the case, given what you have seen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at the pictures, the photographs of these funeral pyres burning all night long, and you look at the news reports from journalists on the ground, you know, literally filming things that are happening live. You look at how hospitals are reporting the numbers of deaths that they're having. They completely are out of sync with the figures that the government is reporting. So in one town last week, there's a town called Surat where, you know, a crematorium, the chimney of it literally collapsed from overheating. And there was a journalist on the ground and she said there's a queue of ambulances an hour long waiting to drop dead bodies off. Bodies are getting, you know, very, very rapid turnaround funerals. And yet people are waiting. Another crematorium in that city had to be reopened after 15 years. That's how many people were dying. And yet when I phoned the district official responsible for reporting those deaths in that city last week, they told me that the total death count was 150 people, mm-hmm. Which in a city of 7 million, that number just does not make sense.
Okay, and how does it feel then for you? Because I know you've written about this, that it's very difficult for you having left and your family are there, and you mentioned your grandmother who is 78. I'm sure a level of guilt comes with that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I left, I got this phone call. I put my name on a wait list because the UK was about to red list India. And I got the sense that the way things were going, that flights would be suspended. And I actually thought at the time that I might not be able to leave for months. Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah. So I thought I might not be able to leave for months. I didn't really know, to be honest. I just thought they could easily shut down the borders completely. And I put my name down on a wait list for the last few flights that were leaving. And at the time I was told, you know, you have 80 people ahead of you in the queue. So I wasn't thinking that I'll leave that day. I got a PCR test done just in case, but, you know, I really didn't think. And then at 6 p.m. I got this phone call saying, you've managed to get a seat. I don't know how it happened. Perhaps they added an extra flight. But they said, you've got the seat and you have 5 minutes to decide whether you're taking it or not. And it was in 4 hours. And so I had to make this decision to leave. And that obviously comes with a huge amount of guilt, leaving people behind, not sure whether I'll see them again, not sure when I'll be able to go back.
Well, VD, thank you very much for talking to us today. That's VD Dashi, who is a freelance journalist now living in London, but has spent some time, considerable time in the last 3 months in Mumbai.